all across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlove.
And welcome back to Up North News Radio. It's 7:06 on this Friday, the 13th of October. Coming up this hour, boy math can't get you to 217. We'll talk to author and media critic Mark Jacob to try to explain the inability of the people running the United States House of Representatives to choose a new speaker. We'll also discuss the coverage of the conflict in Israel. We will talk to Dan Schumacher as well as we preview the upcoming weekend in sports. On this October 13th, Sam Davison is standing by in Madison as well to help me review. Yesterday, there was only just National Farmers Day and National Gumbo Day, and that really was pretty much it. October 13th, whole different thing. It's National M&M Day, so you can just give me your up or down thoughts on a lot of these things. It's National Disaster Preparedness Day, so prepare for a disaster. And I've talked about when we lived down in the Caribbean, and it's the first time I have ever had to put together a disaster kit, a hurricane disaster kit.
Oh, really?
And that is, it's a little unnerving when you get to the last item on the list, and it's a life preserver. It's a life jacket in case, like, the water gets so high in your house, you gotta float. Let's see. It is, there's a few days here, International Skeptics Day. So skepticism.
Skeptical about that.
It's both Metastatic Breast Cancer Awareness Day and National Herpes Awareness Day. It is National Yorkshire Pudding Day. It is National Transfer Money to Your Son Day. Who came up with this one?
I like that one.
Okay. Ms. Davison, if you could send something down to the Pride of Ringgold, we'd appreciate that. It is World Thrombosis Day. It is Vet Nurse Day. It is World Egg Day, and it is National No Bra Day. So there's something in there for everybody. For me,
such variety.
Such variety. I'm choosing to go with M&M Day, and you can choose to go with the Skeptics Day, doubting that some of these things are the actual days, but again, they are. Somehow they get there. And I still like, Aaron Zahmer's suggestion that we find out what does it take to get, you know, one of these holidays made. And let's try to create one. Try to think of something that nobody else has listed as a holiday, which is pretty, I mean, there's a lot of nouns out there, you know, M&Ms, bras, you know, everything. I'm sure we can come up with something and make it a national day.
Like a lot of personal significance, or it has to have absolutely no significance. There's no in between.
I was going to say, we go for the nothing. We go for the one that it makes everybody go,
huh?
What?
Yeah.
You know, National Lost Sock in the Dryer Day, you know, or something like that. I don't know. And again, who's to say how these things come up on your calendar, but they do on these national calendars that radio jocks like me get to read all the time. So that's what we have, and that's what we're going to appreciate. For the program here that you're listening to, if you're doing so live across the Civic Media Radio Network, we thank you so much. If you're listening as a podcast, we thank you so much that way for downloading it. And if you're listening live and saying, hey, maybe I should download this, and that way I don't have to listen to it early in the morning while I'm rushing around getting ready for school or for work, well, go to civicmedia.us, and you can listen to past episodes there. For example, last hour's program is already on the website. Just go to civicmedia.us. It'll be on Apple and Spotify and all the usual places just minutes later. But if you're catching us live, you can also do so on Facebook, on Twitter, on YouTube. And if you're watching on one of the Facebook pages, you can leave a comment there. I know that it was in the comment section that Roger, for example, told us that he too can't drive 55 here on Sammy Hagar's birthday. And he's the one who brought to our attention that WSAW Channel 7 in Wausau, TV legend Mark Zelich had died at the age of 95. So we appreciate all the tips and the questions that all come up when you put a little note on our social media page. We spoke in the last hour briefly about the stadium bill advancing for American Family Field, that a Republican-led committee made some changes to a proposal, tweaked it a bit, advanced it. It's going to go up for an assembly vote next Tuesday, then go on to the state Senate. Governor Evers, through a spokesperson, had some complimentary things to say about it. And so it looks like we're getting that much closer to seeing a final product for stadium renovations, which is all fine and good. It does just call attention, however, to the other things that have been languishing for months. I would dare say years in a couple of things. We've known for well over a year and a half, maybe close to 2 years, that there was going to be a state budget surplus that could somehow be put to work. You'll recall that Republicans sat on it all throughout 2021 and 2022, thinking that Tim Michaels would be elected governor and that then they could just give it all away as tax cuts. Well, that didn't happen. And most of the surplus is still sitting there waiting for a real middle-class income tax cut proposal that both Republicans and Governor Evers can agree on. There's still the need to provide child care assistance that will help out families, help out providers, help out employers. There's so much work to do, but if you missed it in our last hour, all the assembly did yesterday was debate in extremely hateful, discriminatory, and medically ridiculous language. They passed three anti-trans bills and, you know, called it a good day's work. Let's take a break here. We have a rainy forecast for you from Weatherology, the details of that coming up and more on this Friday morning on Up North News Radio. We'll be back. Very nice to see Sean Colvin in concert last night at the Pablo Center in Eau Claire, along with Mary Chapin Carpenter. And yes, of course, Sonny Came Home was one of the tunes that was played, and Mary Chapin Carpenter played a lot of her greatest hits, and just so, I love her voice so much. And the two of them had a very good rapport as they do these shows together, just the two of them with a couple of acoustic guitars. Temperatures around the state have not changed since the last hour, 47 on Lake Wissota, 52 in Madison. Waukesha, you're at 48 degrees. La Crosse, 50. Wausau, 46. Wisconsin Rapids, 46. In Green Bay, it's 48 degrees right now. And in Hayward, 45. And pretty much everybody is either wet or going to get wet and going to get wetter. Meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki is taking a look at a very large storm system that's sitting over the upper Midwest and telling us what it's going to do for us this coming up weekend. Here are the details. Jennifer, good morning.
Good morning. Yeah, you said it. I mean, we're looking at periods of showers for today as a warm front passes just to the south of the state. So a bit of moisture ahead of that system, holding pretty steady in the low to mid-50s for the southern half of the state today. Not much movement compared to where we're currently at. Then mid to upper 40s from Wausau, Wisconsin Rapids, and over towards west central Wisconsin. For the weekend, a chance for showers and storms has started out for most on Saturday. Just cloudy skies expected around Amory and Baldwin, highs in the mid to low 50s, a little warmer in the upper 50s around Richland Center. Sunday, it looks like sunshine around Amory and Baldwin, cloudy skies for everyone else, with a chance for showers around Milwaukee and Waukesha. Temperature-wise, similar to Saturday, expecting to see highs in the mid to low 50s. Then to start out the new work week on Monday, a slight chance for rain once again for southeastern Wisconsin. Otherwise, cloudy for most except for western Wisconsin, Amory, Baldwin down to Richland Center, starting to see some sunshine coming in. And then again, highs lingering in the mid to low 50s.
Jen, I ask this question only because we have to start thinking about, you know, translating rain to snow because we're getting to that time of year. A system like this sitting over us, is it something that would have brought a lot of snow or would have been just a lot of nuisance, you know, blowing but light snow? We have to train our minds to think about what a storm like this would do.
Well, yeah, so it looks like, I mean, for the day, today what we're expecting to see is between 3/4 of an inch to 1 inch possible. So that would actually translate to about 10 inches of snow if we would have gotten to the cooler temperatures. So, yeah, I mean, it's it is going to be pretty windy, so that would make it not great as well. But, yeah, I mean, it would be up to about 10 inches of snow.
Well, and that's what my wife and I were saying walking to our car last night after the concert was like, it's not snow. It's not snow. It's not snow. So we've got that going for us. Jen, thanks so much. Have a great weekend.
You too.
Always nice to visit with Jennifer Wojcicki from Weatherology to give us the forecast as we head into the weekend here. All right. I have an editorial that's going to be coming out Monday, I think, in our newsletter for Up North News that I was working on yesterday. And it starts with a truism that every reporter needs to keep in mind when you're reporting about statistics, specifically, you know, what somebody else is saying about statistics. And I saw it in cartoon form, and it sat on my desk at TV 13 for the longest time. And the saying goes something like this: a politician relies on statistics the way a drunk relies on a lamppost for support, not illumination. And that's the only way to explain kind of the half-baked way that certain people have reported on numbers that were provided recently by the Wisconsin Department of Public Instruction, or DPI. And the topic of the numbers is proficiency. Do students have the skills for the grade level that they're at? And last week's numbers, it would be fair to call them a mixed bag, and that you could look at them as a glass half empty or glass half full thing. You could say students in Wisconsin tested higher than last year, but they're still lower than they were before the pandemic. Or you could say students are still testing at below levels seen before the pandemic, but they are on the rise. So you can make it spin either way, but sometimes the spinning is so violent that it causes nausea. For example, the critics of public education are crowing about how the proficiency numbers, well, let me quote one headline: Wisconsin public school students struggle with reading and math. And the inference, of course, is that voucher school students test better. They do not. And I would call your attention to the Wisconsin Examiner. Go to wisconsinexaminer.com. A wonderful outlet that Ruth Conniff and her team put together. And Ruth Conniff in the Wisconsin Examiner takes those folks to task for not telling you the whole story on the proficiency numbers. She notes in a column that schools in the Wisconsin Parental Choice Program score almost 17 points worse than public schools in English and language arts, with a total proficiency of 22% compared to the public schools' 39%. They did even worse in math. The voucher schools score 18% proficiency versus the public schools' 38%. So much for the school voucher program as a magic bullet to fix education, she writes. Conniff then goes on to show how voucher school advocates have cherry-picked the data to put the best possible spin on numbers that frankly aren't great in any setting. Because look, the news that fewer than half of Wisconsin students are reading, writing, and doing math below their grade level should be very concerning. But no one should see the full data and think to themselves, huh, what we need here is Wisconsin taxpayers paying for two parallel school systems in the state, especially when one of those school systems has proficiency numbers that on the whole are worse than our public schools, or worse than those voucher school numbers are worse than public schools. Wisconsin's public schools deserve from our elected officials a greater commitment to finding the solutions that help every child, regardless of their household income, regardless of their race, regardless of their zip code. They should have the opportunities to learn and to learn at their grade level rather than being caught in this tug of war when one side is frankly using fuzzy math when it comes to spinning the statistics that they want to claim are on their side. There were new inflation numbers that came out yesterday. Was it yesterday or the day before? Sorry, maybe it was Wednesday. Noting that the consumer price index inflation held steady at 3.7% year on year and grew only 0.4% from a month-to-month basis. Core inflation is down to 4.1% year over year. Inflation is falling even more sharply in used vehicle prices and medical care. But shelter and medical care services, inflation is still running rather high. Now, in all cases, it's down from, you know, the 9% levels that we were seeing during some of the worst of the pandemic recession. But among all of the developed Western democracies around the world, inflation in the United States remains lower than everybody else's. And so despite all of the folks who are essentially cheerleading and rooting for a recession because it would help them politically, you know, the numbers don't lie. And the numbers show that while inflation remains stubborn and continues to hang on, it is getting lower. It is getting better here faster than everybody else because of the decisions that are being made in the executive branch by people like President Biden and Governor Tony Evers, and in the legislative branch, like the way that a Democratic-led Congress in the first 2 years of Biden's term put forth the investments in the American Rescue Plan, the Inflation Reduction Act, the bipartisan infrastructure bill, and more. That's where policy matters. We're making the right calls on how to most wisely spend our tax dollars can actually do a lot of good, not right away, maybe not even before the next election, but you're still doing the right thing if in the end it's a net positive. And that's what Democrats did. They lost the majority in the House, but the policies that they put in place continue to keep inflation lower here than any other developed Western democracy. One other note I stumbled upon here, and it deals again with Republican Party politics. And again, bear in mind that we're not hearing much about Republican Party proposals because there just frankly aren't any Republican Party proposals. There's infighting about who will be speaker. There's rooting for a recession. But there's not much in terms of proposals because we have, a theme that we hit on a lot here, we have people who know how to win elections, they know how to be competitive, but they don't know how to govern. They don't know how to actually serve. It's all about the winning. And somebody discovered some time back this quote, "The whole secret of politics is knowing who hates who." And that quote kicks off a column from Greg Sargent in the Washington Post. And the quote was from Kevin Phillips. You don't know him. I don't know him. But you know his work. He's a longtime political analyst. He died this week at the age of 82. He wrote a book in 1969 called The Emerging Republican Majority. And it really should have been subtitled The Southern Strategy, because it's what the Republican Party adopted for decades, Sargent writes, to win over white voters who could then claim to feel alienated by the Democratic Party's embrace of civil rights in the 1960s. It was Kevin Phillips who advised Republicans to exploit the racial anxieties of white voters and link that anxiety directly to crime and to federal spending, and to voting rights. And that strategy, which gave Richard Nixon a 49-state landslide victory in 1972, helped produce GOP majorities for decades. Updated versions of that Southern strategy live on in today's Republican Party. We see it in all manner of code words about everything from spending to pandemic aid, to welfare, having that money drawn away. And we haven't even had time this week to talk about Brett Favre and the trouble that he continues to be in from rooting for welfare money to be misappropriated for his own, you know, advocacy use. But this Southern strategy lives on in the voucher school debates and in everything else that permeates politics. And it's not just racial. You're looking constantly, if you're part of this strategy, you're looking for ways to punch down. And that's what we saw in the Wisconsin legislature yesterday, was hours and hours and hours of punching down on the LGBTQ community and trans youth specifically. It gets used all the time because it works. And the only way it's going to stop working is through the proliferation of other voices, whether it's places like Civic Media, Up North News, or others, to expose it and tell you the truth. Mark Jacob helps continue this discussion right after this. You're Up North. All right, Mark Jacob joins us now. I don't know that Republicans in the House are Mary Chapin Carpenter fans, but maybe they'll have to use this anthem that everything they got the hard way, or at least to get a speaker. And I thought they did it the hard way the first time with 15 ballots, you know, to get to Kevin McCarthy. But Mark, good morning. I think we all think this thing might drag on for a little bit.
Yeah, who knows? I mean, you know, they could all wake up and decide to make Jim Jordan speaker, which would be appalling, really. Other than having Trump in the White House, having Jim Jordan as House Speaker is the closest, you know, an insurrectionist has come to, you know, to head of the government. That, I mean, it should scare everyone, because Jim Jordan was actively trying to overturn the 2020 election. He's, you know, he's just a bad actor. He's also typical of, the funny thing is, he's typical of what the House is right now, which is the House Republicans don't know how to do anything, and they don't do anything. Jim Jordan is not like a legislator. It's not like he's like written a bunch of legislation to make things better for poor people or to make things better for middle class people or to anyone. All he is a loudmouth who talks a lot and goes wherever the next camera is.
Yeah, I asked this of our national correspondent Kia Vakil last hour, and I'll ask it again here. Is this perhaps the best demonstration of how this country needs to find a way to move on from a two-party system? Because right now, nobody would dare work with the other side, the other people, the enemy. Whereas in other democracies, it would only take five or six Republicans. They don't have to agree with all the Democrats, but they could find a, you know, enough Democrats to basically put together a governing coalition, as is done in other places. I guess I'm pessimistic now after years of wishful optimism that this could ever happen, but what do you think?
Well, that's an interesting idea. I mean, frankly, I've always thought that a parliamentary system was better for that reason, because it didn't create this kind of bifurcation, this, you know, two-party thing where you only had two choices. You had a lot of choices. I don't know how this is going to work out. I feel like any Republican who crossed the aisle and voted for Hakeem Jeffries for Speaker would instantly be ostracized. So I'm not pessimistic. I'm not optimistic that that's going to happen. But it kind of should happen. I mean, because otherwise, what's happening is the other dynamic, which is the entire Republican Party is being, you know, hijacked by extremists. And let's really be really clear here, Pat. We're talking about extremists, and then even more extremists. Because it's not like Kevin McCarthy is some sort of idealistic moderate.
No,
he does everything that Trump says. You know, I mean, he is kowtowed to fascism. I feel the Republican Party is in such a bad state now that I don't know whether any people who are still in the Republican Party are capable of doing what's right for the country.
I want to ask about specific media coverage of all of this happening. And I say it because you only know the frame that you know. I don't know every Washington, D.C. reporter. Somehow, first I got to know of Jake Sherman of Punch Bowl News. I follow his feed, but it became clear, other people pointed it out to me, that he was essentially Kevin McCarthy's, you know, in. That he was channeling whatever McCarthy was thinking, which, like it or not, it just means he was essentially well sourced, and you learn a lot following him, even if what you're learning isn't always necessarily what's going to happen. Do you have examples of people that are either, I don't want to say doing a good or bad job, but a thorough job in their reporting of Congress?
Well, I think, you know, Ali Vitali on MSNBC is doing a pretty good job. The thing about Manu Raju on CNN is he's very factual, you know, and mm-hmm. whether you like it that or not, sometimes I wish he would like tell the truth as far as how bad things are. But mostly he's running around with a microphone and, you know, getting what people say. The thing about Jake Sherman, and I'm not a Jake Sherman fan, frankly. I think that, you know, there's such a thing as being well-sourced, but there's such a thing as being kind of making a deal with the people you're covering.
Right.
And he tends to be very fact that when you hear him talk about Kevin McCarthy or various other people, you know that that's what Kevin McCarthy and the other people wanted you to hear. Tells you that he's in effect just kind of making a deal to be the first one to tell you what Kevin McCarthy is wants you to hear. And that's not good. That's not journalism. That's the stenography thing, or that's even worse because he's like, you know, channeling Kevin McCarthy. And so the thing about that, all that punch bowl news and the Politico stuff is it's just way too kind of industry oriented rather than public service oriented. It's way too, you know, it's the stuff that political consultants want to read and want to hear
yes.
about. It doesn't have anything of value, you know, for the woman in Waukesha who wants to find out whether, you know, she's going to have health insurance next year.
Yeah, you're absolutely right there. That and I want to make sure I clear on the record that whether it's Punch Bowl or Axios, Politico, The Hill, Roll Call, those are pretty much insider things that, you know, political nerds like you and I would look at to kind of get a sense for what is going on. I think in Wisconsin, people are very well served that Patrick Marley, after many, many years at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, is now at the Washington Post and doing just incredible work there. So in terms of mainstream journalism, mm-hmm. I would call attention to Patrick Marley. But yeah, the point I think I was making was just that it is kind of being covered almost like an industry publication, right. Almost like an entertainment industry publication. But again, some people know that's how they make their bones is, you know, by looking like the consummate insiders.
Right, but it's the thing about it is this is way too important for that.
Yes,
that's the thing that gets me. I mean, it's not like, you know, if you want to cover it like a football game, you know, oh well, there's a, you know, a screen pass to the left side, you know, that fine, I guess that's okay. But that does not take the place of actually telling the American public what's in it for them or how they're going to be damaged by what's going on. That's not, and that's way more important. That's why the New York Times and the Washington Post, when they get into this kind of play-by-play stuff or this, well, you know, what's the savvy way that Kevin McCarthy is, you know, managing to, you know, suck up to the extreme radicals in order to stay speaker, that kind of stuff only kind of encourages this kind of cynical politics rather than the grown-up stuff, Pat. I mean, the thing that we're seeing in the U.S. House of Representatives now is a bunch of adolescents, a bunch of children running around trying to figure out what to do. They're not acting like grown-ups. And I have to wonder whether when the election rolls around next year, whether the American people are going to want to vote for kids or going to want to vote for grown-ups.
Mm-hmm. That treating the audience like grown-ups is so important for newsrooms. And I'm quite certain you noticed that Jay Rosen from New York University put up something yesterday calling out a Colorado outlet for embracing something that he has coined, not the odds, but the stakes, and stop covering politics like a horse race and cover it in terms of the stakes for the American people. And he was basically giving a shout out to, I think it was Colorado Newsline, right, for saying, and I've got the headline here, so let me get it right. That's the thing with 25 tabs open, Mark, is you're going to click the wrong one from time to time. Here it is. The editor's headline is, "We are demoting horse race election coverage. Here's why." And the subhead, reporting that serves the community well focuses on what's important, not to politicians, but to people. This sounds like duh, but in right. today's media world, right. that's actually a big deal.
Right. And the entire goal is not just to get elected, but to get elected and do something. And that's where you, to me, that's where the House Republicans are just a perfect example of a group that wants to get elected, but doesn't want to do anything to help anyone when they get elected. They just, you know, they want to get more campaign contributions, apparently. But just to be really explicit about what we're talking about, Pat, it's not writing about a politician doing something and whether that increases their chances of getting reelected or not. It's covering a politician and saying, well, they just came out for reforming or changing Social Security and Medicare. And what that might mean is this program or this program or this, or you might not get this, or they may do away with, you know, your coverage for so-and-so, or I mean, it's getting into stuff that actually, it's going to the consumer. It's going to the voter, and it's going to the regular people in the American public. It's taken out of the realm of, well, this is going to be really smart for him as far as he's going to, you know, get support for this. And it's, we're not rooting for the politicians. That's the thing that I think that the news media miss more than anything else, is that regular people are not rooting for the politicians. We're not saying, boy, I sure hope Nancy Pelosi wins the speakership. No, we're not thinking that. We're thinking, boy, I sure hope my government manages to, you know, to come in if a hurricane hits my town. I mean, it's practical stuff like that. It's getting our roads fixed. It's potholes. And I sure hope when this election rolls around more that people point out that in 4 years, Donald Trump couldn't get an infrastructure bill passed. He couldn't get any federal help for, you know, major to fix bridges that are going to fall down, to fill potholes, things like that. And Biden did that. And that's not grandstanding. That's not the kind of stuff they talk about too much on the, you know, TV news. But good God, it sure matters whether, you know, you run into a pothole and you've got to, you know, fix your car. I mean, it matters to people. And things that matter to people should matter to the news media. That's what's being lost here.
It should, but I'll give the last word on this topic to our own publisher for Courier Newsroom, Tara McGowan. Up North News is a separate entity from Civic Media. We're part of Courier Newsroom. And she said at a recent summit, quote, "The reason the media is as bad as it is, the reason they're as obsessed with Trump as they are, is because it makes them money." And no truer words.
Right. Oh, I agree with that.
That's what they do. Let's turn over now to the unfortunate events in Israel. And again, it's such a multidimensional thing where you can't lump Palestinians and Hamas together. You can't lump all Jewish people together with support for the Netanyahu government. You have so many innocent people being killed on both sides of the conflict without both sides seeing the fact that this started as, you know, a terrorist attack. All of this leads to incredibly complex reporting, if it's that can be done right, or it could be just very surface, shallow, you know, here's what's happening at this very minute. What's your evaluation of what the coverage has been like over these 6 days?
I think it's been pretty good. I mean, you know, I guess people who know me know that I criticize the news media a lot since I'm not in it anymore. But I do feel like that they've done a pretty good job of remembering that there are victims in Gaza too, yet not minimizing at all the just insane, violent attacks on the Israeli settlers. And I mean, Pat, I have to wonder what is Hamas after? I mean, is Hamas? Are they in some sort of dead ender kind of mentality where they want to be attacked and they want all their people to die? It's they couldn't possibly have thought that the result of this brutal, disgusting attack would be for them. You would have to think that it would be against them, I feel like the news media have done a pretty good job of recognizing the victims in Gaza, as well as recognizing the victims, you know, in the kibbutzim and you know, all the Israeli victims as well. But the real test is going to be here, where if the Israeli army comes in hard in Gaza, as you know, I mean, obviously they're coming in hard from the air right now, but if they come on the ground and you start getting this block to block, you know, street fighting, it's going to be just ugly and terrible, and there are going to be a lot of civilian victims. And the real question, I think that's going to be the real test, is whether the U.S. news media can manage to reflect that and not try to minimize it, not try to, I mean, Israel is a U.S. ally, and Hamas is not. So you do have to wonder how much that will affect coverage. And so it's been a real test, but I think it's going to be an even bigger test coming up in this next week.
All right, just a couple seconds left. So give me a number, the percentage odds that there will be a Speaker of the House when we talk next week, Friday.
Ooh, that's a tough one. I mean, you know, betting on the Republicans to do something,
I know.
Got to do something competent.
You got 5 seconds to give me a number.
All right, I'm going to say 50% chance.
Okay, there you go. Thanks, Mark. Have a great weekend.
All right, you too.
All right, we'll come back with Dan Schumacher and wrap up things for the week right after this. You're up north. All right, coming up next on the Civic Media Radio Network, you have James and the Gang in Wisconsin Rapids, Stephanie Miller in Madison, Chad Holmes in Wausau, Stu Daniels in the Chippewa Valley, La Crosse, Hayward, and Oshkosh, Earl Ingram in Waukesha, Green Bay, and Racine. They're all followed by As Goes Wisconsin, and then the news at noon, Town Call at 12:15, and Todd Alba at 1 o'clock. But right now, let's visit with Dan Schumacher. What was our Grateful Dead song? It sounded weather-related.
Cold Rain and Snow.
Yeah,
that sounds... And it was an older version. He played the studio version from like 1970, I want to say.
Okay.
So
hopefully do you listen to studio versions very much of Grateful
Not
Dead
Not much
tunes?
At all. Yeah. Not much at all. I have all of them on CDs, but I never listen to them. I like putting on the app that there's an app, Grateful Dead app, that it's nothing but live concerts. Oh. So I'd rather listen to the live versions of it.
I would imagine then when you talk about CDs that you've got, is there like a definitive box set of everything or no?
Yes, there is. There actually is. So they have it split up into eras and also split up into, before we're going down a rabbit hole here, it's just different versions of the band. You know, sure. They used to have a female singer with them at one time.
Oh,
so there's box sets on that stuff. When Donna Jean Gacha was a singer with them while their husband was the piano player, but then it changed again and a new sound came out with Brent Midland. And so it's always different. There's okay. All kinds of, they've gone through like five piano players that have passed away.
So. I ask because I know that I have the box set. I don't even remember what it's called anymore, but the Definitive Beatles box set with all the remastered. And I think only once on like a rainy weekend did I listen like front to back from the very first Beatles album through the last one. It's not something you do all the time, but it's one of those things it's nice to have. So that you can pick something out and just pop that in. Whoever thought we'd be referring to the CD player as old-fashioned. But if you want to listen to music the old-fashioned way. All right, let's get to sports. We'll do the Badgers first here. The Badger football team plays tomorrow afternoon at Camp Randall Stadium, taking on Iowa. That's a 3 o'clock game on Fox. And the number one ranked Badger women's volleyball team, they're now 15-0, and they're in action at the Fieldhouse tonight, taking on Rutgers. Over in the baseball playoffs, the Phillies eliminated the Braves for the second straight year, winning 3-1 last night. And so the Phillies advanced to play the Diamondbacks, who swept the Brewers, and then they swept the Dodgers. Game one is Monday night in Philadelphia. Sunday night is when the American League Championship Series begins. It's a Lone Star State showdown as the Houston Astros will host the Texas Rangers again. That's on Sunday night, and that's an all wild card National League Championship Series. You had Arizona taking out the Brewers, the Central Division winner, and then the Dodgers, the Western Division winner. The Phillies took out the Braves, who won 100 games over in the East. A lot of people are saying, you know, that this proves that there's something faulty about the playoffs. And at the risk of sounding like an old man, Dan, my take on it is you knew what the schedule was going to be. So, you know, you play for the schedule that's given to you, not the one you want.
Want, right, exactly. I agree with you 100% on that one. Mm-hmm. It does seem like all the favorites that, you know, went down. I was really surprised Atlanta lost. That was the one I thought.
I was surprised the Dodgers.
The Dodgers too. Yep.
I mean, everybody was really thinking that was going to be, you know, the NLCS for the ages was to watch these two, and neither one's there. I mean, the Diamondbacks could run out of steam at any point here. The Phillies, I have a soft spot for Bryce Harper. I watched him come up with the Nationals, and They almost went all the way. Was it 2017 or 2018? And the Nats had to trade him away. And so when the Nats won the World Series in 2019, they did it without him. And he went to a division rival. But he has been more than adopted by the Philadelphia community. And he had those two home runs in the game the other day. So
he played really good defense the other night, too.
Yes. Yep.
He made a couple of really good stabs on line, you know, down the line or in the gap between, you know, the second baseman and him. There's been a lot of good defensive plays.
And those defensive plays have been killers for Brewers fans and for Twins fans watching that Astros series where the ball is hit that, you know, 9 times out of 10, they call it, oh, there's a seeing eyeball, you know, that gets into the outfield.
Yeah.
And the stabs that these infielders were making were just stabs through your chest, you know?
Yes, yes, no doubt, no doubt. Hey, I got one for you.
Yes, sir.
If the weather permits, I think the women's basketball season opens up in Iowa, where the Hawkeyes, women's Hawkeyes, top player in the country,
Caitlin Clark.
Okay. Did you know that they sold 52,000 tickets for the football stadium to host a basketball game?
Wow.
Yeah, just because it was on my mind because I was thinking about the volleyball game that was played down in Nebraska.
In front of
80,000 people. So women's sports is really – it's turned. It's turned. There's a fan base there. There's none of that old stigma – or stereotype that it's boring or it's slow or whatever. They're drawing the fans in. Basketball, volleyball, you name it. It's a high level of competition.
Yep.
It's fun to watch. Got a daughter that played college sports, so I'm a big Title IX person, so I think it's just great for sports what we're seeing with on the female side.
All right, well, let's get up to your neck of the woods there at Northland College. What is happening for interscholastic or intercollegiate
sports? Well, our men's soccer team is hot. Mm-hmm. Our men's soccer team is hot. We're in second place to only Superior, UW-Superior. I'm excited about it. I just hired a new men's basketball coach. So basketball practice started this week. So I was watching practice last night, and I like what I see there. Trying to get better, trying to get an organization put together in the way that I feel that can give us the best chance to win. Be surprised on how big organization, having the right people in place from an administration standpoint, supports the coaches, which allows them to be coaches and not so much gophers and administrators. So I want them to coach, administrators administrate. So I'm trying to build that type of structure to have some success up here. But we're seeing a little bit of success right now with our men's soccer team. Even our women's volleyball team is about 500 and middle of the pack, and they were picked last in the league, so they're overachieving there. So some really positive things that are going on.
Okay. Appreciate that very much. Boy, we haven't seen each other for a bit here. One of us is going to have to get to the other's hometown one of these days.
Yeah, I'm hoping. I know I got to come back because I got to fly out of the cities. I got to go down to the NCAA headquarters for meetings next week. And then the weekend after will be my last weekend down there because I'm going to rent my house.
You built this house on the Chippewa River, and now you're going to VRBO it for like the next 6 months or something. So,
yeah, but anybody knows the weather. To travel between Ashland and Chippewa in the middle of the winter is going to be a challenge.
That's okay. You know, financially, good move out of you. So,
hey, there's a big football game this Sunday.
Tell me.
I don't know what the Packer fans are going to do on Sunday.
It's a bye week. What do you got?
Yeah. Vikings Bears.
Oh, okay. What?
It's now supposed to rain like crazy.
Oh, well, now I've got something to watch. All right. Thank you, sir. Talk to you a little later.
Take care.
All right. Hey, just a reminder, you can follow me on social media, Pat Kreitlow Up North, or Pat Kreitlow on Twitter, and sign up for our newsletter at upnorthnewswi.com. Have a great weekend. See you Monday.